welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And it is a new year. And you can't, recap, or you can't go through the ending of a year without, being hit with a barrage of all the people we've lost. And there's a lot of people that, I don't want to get into a haranguing of individuals, nor do I want to get into, recognizing the contributions and those people who have passed, regardless of the tragedy or circumstances of their passing. But there's one passing that I don't want to pass up on, pardon the pun. But one of the things that I, because I started thinking about this for a long time, as a matter of fact, for decades, I have been pointing to our programming. And what I mean by that is how our society has been shaped by our entertainment. Now, I tell people, you must read Plato's Republic, because Plato's Republic literally points to the integral role that entertainment has in driving we the people, society, in a very specific path to obtain a very specific outcome. So, with all of that said, The passing of, I believe, Norman Lear, who was a involved and a producer with some really integral roles in kind of promoting. And to be honest, it wasn't until his passing that I really kind of looked at, all of the things he did, because here's a guy that did All in the Family. He did, if I remember correctly, The Jeffersons and quite a few other shows. But his involvement was, and I always thought that it was about bigotry and, creating stereotypes towards people who had ideologies. Now, he used Archie Bunker as a conservative who was just always wrong and stupid, illiterate. And he did the same thing with George Jefferson. And so trying to paint these pictures that these patriarchs who were stuck in their ways and illiterate and uneducated were always wrong. And so I always thought that, and one of the things that I could actually see is, racism in America was really on the heel, and or I should say healing and on the mend, I should say, on the mend. As we kind of look at the 70s, things started actually getting better. And all of a sudden, because in the early 60s, or I should say the early 70s, All in the Family, the Jeffersons, and a lot of different programming started coming out. I mean, Star Trek was one of the pivotal roles as far as acknowledging or actually having a role for Lieutenant O'Hara, who was a member of a society. She wasn't a black person. In other words, there was just no race involved in the script. And so it wasn't black and white or anything like that. It was all members of the Federation, that we were all a part of a society, which, I thought that was great stuff. However, when you really peel it all back, you really start seeing how, and as a matter of fact, what I'd invite you to do is go look at the list of, this is in Wikipedia, the list of 1970s American television episodes with LGBT themes. And so they actually point to how some shows were constantly barraging us with this challenge to our societal structure. In other words, the family, because the attack has been on the family. And so as I looked and I kind of said, oh, there's that guy that did that, I really started realizing that he was just one of the many players that was being paid and rewarded for providing very specific content that would help shape us. And I'm telling you, the people that have been involved in manipulating us, they're good. They know what they're doing. And so it was kind of a historic point. But what I want to do, because I really want to dive into, because this is 2024, I want to dive into actually talking about the solutions. But we can't talk about the solutions until we really get equally informed. Because, as I always say, reasonable people equally informed seldom disagree. And I also say, and many people say this, knowledge is power, but it only becomes power when we act upon it. And our framers, Madison was very eloquent in stating that the people are the fountain of political power in America. And so what that means is that if we actually exert, we demand, you know, very specific things, we will get what we demand. The problem is that we're all chasing the wrong thing. And so what we have to do, because as reasonable people, one would think that we would look at the bigger picture. And that's not what's happening. As a matter of fact, everybody is in this, you know, it's like this wave, this ocean of people reacting and bouncing off each other. It's not like we're all starting to at the starting line and we're all moving along in this journey together. Many of us are at different points and different paths and so forth. So we're all intersecting. And so I believe reasonable people equally informed seldom disagree, again, and I believe that before we actually conclude that this is the right thing we have to do, we actually have to identify what we're trying to fix. In other words, what is the real problem? In other words, before we start saying that this is the solution, we really have to back out and say, what is the problem or what is it we have to fix? And so we have to be the adults. We have to stop. We have to look at what's going on and actually identify the problem. Now, to me, this becomes kind of simple because when we really look at what is the problem, it is government overreach. Does anybody think otherwise? When our government is actually waging, the United States government has not only been manipulating the world, the United States government has been manipulating America. And we have been, as I pointed out for Christmas, we have been a driving force behind capitalism in the world. And Christmas was a big, no doubt, a big ball of energy every year to help fire up these engines of capitalism, or what we would call capitalism. But it's actually, there's a better term for it, but I'll just move on. Yeah, because it's all about profits and it's all about gains and it's all about control and market mergers and acquisitions and consolidating economic power. And so the banks, as we know, the banks are huge drivers behind this. And we plan on having McGivens and many others back on this year. I'm still trying to work out with Trevor. I know he's really busy. He's got a new grandchild in the family. So anyway, if everybody agrees that it's government overreach, then I think we're kind of at the right spot. However, we need to actually articulate, we need to quantify what that overreach is, because it's not about abortion. Because the real problem is everybody looks at this issue, this issue, this issue, they get myopic and they fail to back out and go, well, what are all the things that they're doing wrong? Excuse me. You got to remember, that our government was formed by a compact. Some people call it a social compact, but it really wasn't a social compact. It was a hardcore compact amongst very specific parties. If the parties to it were not we the people, the parties to it were the states. Just like with your state constitution, the parties to your state constitution was not we the people. See, if it was really we the people, even though we created enumerated powers, the people, if they kind of surrender their sovereignty, then, you know, kind of a, it creates an unfettered government. But that's not the case. You see, the states are perpetual entities. They don't die off. Even though those who have been functioning and operating as, quote unquote, the states or the counties, they die off. They're people. These entities are perpetual, and you cannot redefine something that was already defined. In other words, in a compact, if a line has been defined that this is what this means, then there's no way to redefine that unless you go back to the parties and say, we believe that this is what this really should mean. And do you all agree? Because it would require an amendment to actually accept that new definition. No, we don't accept that. Get back into your context. Get back into your little box there, federal government, and function the way we told you to function and how what these things mean. See, the arbiters, the judges over that constitution really is not the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has a very passive role, and they're only to decide in cases that arise under the Constitution for the, you know, for both the parties and the federal government, which is why they were denned, they were contained very tightly in that Constitution, where their jurisdiction could not wander beyond the Constitution itself. So to quantify the problem, what you have to do is you have to actually look at the Constitution and find out where it's being violated. And so as you go through the Constitution, this is why we have a color-coded Constitution. You want to know what's being violated? Look up our color-coded Constitution, and now you can see all of the parts of the Constitution that are being violated, from Article 1 all the way to Article 7 and even through the amendments. Now we've quantified. So we have actually quantified for you the violations of the Constitution. So in other words, we've been able to capture and lay out how the federal government is actually violating the law. Now remember, a Republican form of government is not just a representative government. It is a government that is based on the rule of law, where the law is king. And if the government is no longer functioning by the rule of law and making up their own rules and laws as they go along, then the only people you have to blame is we the people, because we're not holding our public servants accountable. As long as all, every single one of our public servants from the county all the way up to the federal level are able to squirm around and, you know, manipulate and do what they want to do to help aggrandize themselves and not be accountable, then we're going to continue having this problem. This is why the simplicity, folks, of what it takes to save America is holding our public servants accountable to that very Constitution. I can't simplify it any more than that. It literally is, and we actually have the power. They gave us the power in the First Amendment. So we're covering a lot of stuff, and we cover a lot of stuff throughout the year. And so tomorrow we're going to get into the committees of safety, and we're going to get into the Tory acts, and or actually it's not the committees, we'll get into all of that. I'll read through the Tory acts starting tomorrow, and we're going to start really unraveling, you know, what type of government we actually had and what we ended up going into, because we're going to refute the sovereign citizen movement. We're basically going to lay out how Anna von Ritz and a lot of these other different sovereign movements, jural assembly movements, how they've all propped themselves up on an antiquated, abandoned form of government. What we actually got out of that Constitutional Convention was a completely different form of government. It was a brand new government. And so, and we'll kind of talk about what problems that caused. But right now, let's just talk about really what's the problem, what we need to do, and why I'm going to cover the things the way I'm going to cover them this year. So the color-coded Constitution clearly articulates specifically how the Constitution is being violated. Why doesn't Anna von Ritz and the rest of these pogues actually tell you this? Oh, because they want you to believe that the federal government has actually legitimately done all of these things, that they've created and have grandized their power all unconstitutionally. See, that's the caveat. That's the little thing they don't mention, that they had no authority to do all of these things. Because once you actually lay down, where did they get the authority to create the Organic Act and to actually implement the Organic Act? Where did they get the authority to do that? Did the states allow them to do that? Well, the states didn't stop them, so it must be legitimate. It's almost like, you know, as long as the guy with the checkbook can get away with writing checks for things he has no authority to write checks for, then it's all legitimate. No, it's all fraud. Every time a check is written without authority, that is a fraudulent check. And that guy stands in jeopardy every time he writes those checks. That's the same thing with our federal government. It's all, they're defrauding us. They've been defrauding us for a very long time. So we've articulated the Constitution, how it's been violated. And how did I come across all of this? Going through the resolutions. When you really look at what Thomas Jefferson did, he audited the Constitution and he actually held everything to the actual language that this is what you can do. You can't do these things. So in the Kentucky Resolutions of 98, that's exactly what he did. So why wouldn't we do the same? Why has nobody else done the same thing? Why is it that I'm the only one, or I shouldn't say that, because there's other people that are joining in, but it seems like nobody cares about really solving the problem. Folks, I know there's billions of dollars involved in this grievance industry. I know that there's a lot of people making big money because of the problem. And we're going to go through what many of these folks are doing because of the problem, to make money instead of actually fixing the problem. So we've got the color-coded Constitution, and then that's not enough, because the color-coded Constitution doesn't capture actual encroachments, things that aren't constitutional that they have created and have actually created regulations and laws to support these things they've created, such as corporations, such as banks, such as the Department of Interior, the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Justice, the Department of Commerce, the Department of Labor, the Department of Transportation, Health and Human Services, Housing and Urban Development. All of these things are usurpations. They had no authority to do it. They're all fraud. Okay, so now we've kind of given you a much bigger picture, not just the violations of the Constitution. Now they're doing all sorts of things they have no authority to do. Now, on top of that, the federal government has also gone down and created other little laws to help actually create or spur off, like the digital currency. Biden has created an executive order that says we're going to go off and do this. He has no legislative authority. The Constitution did not give the executive any positive legislative power. The power granted to the executive within that Constitution is negative. In other words, the only thing he could do is just say, you can't do these things. I veto these things. The veto power is the negative power over, you know, treaties, over bills, over legislation. He can even veto legislation that comes from underneath the exclusive legislation. In other words, if Congress is trying to create some law for Washington, D.C., and only Washington, D.C., he could actually veto that law. He has that negative power over anything that Congress does. Now, some people talk about the courts and the courts having this power. They do not have any legislative power. They actually don't even have negative power. Only the president has negative power. The only thing the court can do is they can take the Constitution and they can determine based on how the Constitution was defined by the states. This is where they're legally bound in contract law. How was the Constitution defined? And when we look at how it was defined during the ratification debates, if they start to impose or interpret or redefine the Constitution in any other way, then they're violating the Constitution. In other words, they're bound, they are tied to those legal terms and definitions within that compact. They have no ability to bend, change, and interpret the compact at all. If there's a question, if there is a question regarding what something means, it is their duty to either go to Congress to say, has this been defined? And if it hasn't been defined, then they need to tell Congress, or they directly go to the states and say, hey, how do you define this? This is your compact. How have you defined this? Have you defined this at all? And if not, then define it for us. They have no authority to actually interpret and define. So how did they get to this point? Oh, now see, this is where America, because there were very few people in America that were educated, and education became a very intimidating power. Ah, these people know stuff, and they can prove things, and they can, you know, create this labyrinth of lies. And that's exactly because most of America was illiterate. As a matter of fact, James Madison was very critical of the lack of literacy in America. They, you know, but they created a system that empowered the people, even though they may be illiterate. So what ended up having to happen was this whole, if you want to call it a grand conspiracy, and I will tell you that many things happened on their own accord. It wasn't like it was the next step for, you know, that. It wasn't like somebody came along to this person and said, now you need to go do this. No. The architect of the deceit, he was the one that was driving and inspiring, and I'll just use inspiring in a very evil context, of getting people to do very evil things. And this is how we kind of moved from the, you know, from all of these different forms of societies that have crumbled and been destroyed by the exact same means. This is what we see today. And so we see how this intimidation of lawyers, because the one thing that had the greatest amount of education, because at this point in time, medicine was still this, you know, it was like this abyss. It was this ocean of unknown, charted things. Until we actually started developing technology to start seeing things, we didn't grow technologically in medicine until well over a century later. This is why bleeding and leeches and those things were still medical practices. The term quackery was absolutely a term that most people started utilizing because they started recognizing that many of these things were just that, quackery. They weren't founded on any facts. Well, it worked with this one person. They have no idea why. It wasn't scientific. And so as they started applying those types of principles, you know, that technology and that education started growing. But engineering and math and law, those were some big intimidating types of people because they understood things that we common folk didn't. And so when we would challenge them, they would kind of stand up and go, do you know who you're talking to? I mean, they literally berated and they intimidated and they used their lies and deceit and their power, their education, to actually control the direction to aggrandize themselves. And they had no idea the evil that they were unleashing on this nation. We'll be right back after this. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of Liberty. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so the reason I was down this rat hole talking about how law and these people of education started actually intimidating folks, well, to be honest, folks, and as a matter of fact, we go through this, and I've read this already, in 1821 when John G. Jackson went to James Madison and said, hey, you know, can you please release your notes on the Constitutional Convention? Because the way we're being told what the Constitution means doesn't jive with what we believe and what we've heard. And we really need something factual to help us, you know, refute some of the crap that they're doing, such as the cases and the decisions that were coming out of the Marshall Court, as well as some of the stuff that the federal government was doing, like the Missouri Compromise. This was in 1821. And Madison said it didn't matter what we thought during the Constitutional Convention. It didn't matter. The only thing that mattered is how the states understood the Constitution. In other words, the only thing that matters regarding what is constitutional, what isn't constitutional, is how the states understood it at that time. There's no gray area whatsoever. It is black. A contract is black and white, no gray. And what lawyers do is they like to create gray. They like to create the questionable so that they can start bending. They get that wood into the water. They start softening it up and they start twisting and bending. And next thing you know, you don't have a straight rod or dowel anymore. You have a curve or a curlicue, a spring or what have you. Ah, that's the power of education. How they can bend and pervert things because the masses don't know any better. And eventually, and as a matter of fact, even though there's probably cases where people were mysteriously killed to silence them, there's no doubt in my mind that that's probably happened. The majority of this grand facade that was created was done due to the old, good old-fashioned intimidation of education. So that's why I'm showing you how, when we started moving forward, how the president started using executive orders. But before the president started crossing the line of legislating, the legislation started coming out of the court, and the interpretation started surfacing. Precedents and case law did not get injected until much later, towards the end of Madison's life. While he was president, Marshall tried to reinterpret and trying to actually inject law. There's no doubt in my mind, Madison would have exercised his constitutional authority as president and would have removed Marshall, because the court has no legislative authority. Even Madison questioned many times whether his call for prayer, fasting, and remonstrance as a nation was something that was crossing the line. There were points in time when he felt it was proper, but there were several times when he, actually called for the nation, not several times, but there were a few times where he called for the nation to fast and pray for humility. And then he actually recanted that. He said, no, let me pull that back. I don't think this is a proper case for this, because he was a very religious man, but he didn't want to inflict his level of religious practices and faith upon others. He thought it was repugnant to claim and to tell somebody what Bible they should be using. It's between you and the Spirit. And so anyway, so getting my arms and our arms around what the real problem is, we can see that not only did the Constitution get directly violated, but in some of those violations, such as legislative powers, we now have laws that may not have created a power, but we're being regulated by laws that were unconstitutional. Whether it came from the executive or whether it came from the judiciary, they are unconstitutional, folks. They have no jurisdiction over marriage. They have no jurisdiction over life. They have no jurisdiction over our businesses, over commerce. Their jurisdiction over commerce within the union is to relegate or regulate the commerce among the states, not within them. The language is very clear, among, not within. These men knew exactly what they were saying, that the federal government was to just ensure that the states couldn't begin to play economic warfare tactics. And what was one of the first things that they did? As this nation started growing and as this movement of abolition started actually growing in America, they started using economic tactics and waged economic tactics against the South. Now, did the South have the right to have slavery? The Constitution made it a state issue. It didn't imply or inflict slavery upon anyone. States and governments were self-determined. When a state joined the Union, they would determine whether they were going to inflict slavery or not. The way slavery grew in the South was due to the fact that as these plantation owners had families and they had these large plantation owners had money, they created franchises without really being franchised. But, the Joneses had three sons and they gave money to go buy land in these new areas of development and created plantations, three new plantations. And that was all a part of the family, even though there was, no intermingling of profits and shares going back. Maybe there was a repayment of those loans or what have you, maybe. But, that's what families do. And so the spread of slavery in America had more to do with the self-preservation of a family and its affluence and its power, which is why when you really look at the Civil War, I forget who it was, identified this. I want to say it was Thomas Sowell. But Thomas Sowell pointed out that it was less than 1,000 families. Less than 1,000 families. Now, just remember, there are millions of people in the South, less than 1,000 families in the South who had the large plantations in these states, all stepped forward and said, we need to secede because of slavery. And basically committed these states down a path that then received an unconstitutional response from Abraham Lincoln. And it inflicted a very deep and dark sorrow upon our land. And did we come out of this righteously? In some ways, there's no doubt in my mind that the 14th Amendment was a divine inspiration and absolutely a gift from God. But there were many things, and, people are flawed. We're all flawed. I mean, I can easily, as an armchair quarterback, sit and judge every person. But I will tell you, the person that gets judged the most by me is myself. And anybody that knows me knows this. So bottom line, this is the magnitude of the problem. We have all of these laws that are inflicted upon us that are unconstitutional. We have all of these usurpations of offices, roles, responsibilities, powers, and even property. The usurpation of property that the federal government doesn't have the authority to possess. And then we have the color-coded Constitution. All of these things, now we've kind of put into encapsulated the magnitude of the problem, and it is huge. But it is all like a house of cards, folks. All of this stuff, because it's not founded on the Constitution, the states, we the people, only need to inhale and exhale, and whew, it's gone. And we will clearly send a message to the world that you can't take this country. You can't do what you're doing. Everything you did was defrauding us. And every player in the world has literally launched and supported this warfare against the United States. And the key player, the key, I'll just say, antagonist has been Britain. And they've been the key antagonist from the very beginning. So as we start looking at, you know, moving forward, you know, we need to actually get our arms kind of around what are the different systems or the solutions that we need to, you know, consider. There are, I come up with seven. There may be more, but I've come up with seven. One path, you know, of actually fighting back. And let me just be clear here, folks. The Third World War has already commenced, and it's commenced a long, long time ago. And as a matter of fact, the Third World War was actually the First World War, and this First World War will be the Final World War, just like the American Revolution was that war. It was the war of political ideologies, where we actually had to fight. That was actually a world war, and it is the same world war, and it is the final world war, because this world war, even though it was a military war, and then we fought two other military wars, the First World War and the Second World War, where supposedly all of the world was engaged in fighting these tyrants. The fact of the matter is, folks, is that when we see this world war today, it is a political war. It has finally gotten into its final stage of the battlefield. And the battlefield is literally over. Can they do what they want to us? Can they use this facade? Can they use this illegitimate facade that they have created? And it seems like a mountain range about to fall upon us. And I am here to tell you that that is a house of cards. That is not a mountain range. It is a range of cards. And all's we have to do is simply demand that out of every public servant, it is this simple, folks, every public servant must understand their oath of office, and they must comply to that Constitution, and that all of this unconstitutional stuff is stopped. That, in essence, is Republic Review. That, in essence, is the beginning of the end for them, at least for them here in America. We have the ability to with something as fluid as water, cut these chains that they have bound us with, because those chains are literally just figments of powder that have been formed, and this water will just cut through them like water cuts through sand. And we will find that the whole world will actually heave back and forth. And as we look at everything, because it's actually not just this the political war, but it's a political war that has spiritual connotations. So as we look at the different paths is the status quo. In other words, are we going to allow the facade that the parties, the parties is the solution. You got to follow the party. And I'm here to tell you no. I'm here to tell you that is a huge part of the problem. We can prove that the parties are a part of the problem. So we actually have to challenge the parties and actually work within the parties to actually change their paradigm from their agenda to the agenda of full compliance of the Constitution. If the parties aren't willing to do that, then we must crush them under our feet. We must obliterate them. We must make them obsolete. We have to abandon agendas. We can no longer allow agendas. We're going to repeal and replace. No, you will comply to the Constitution. Socialized medicine is unconstitutional. The federal government cannot be involved in it. It's done. The federal government cannot be involved in this Department of Transportation. It's done. Housing, energy, all of these things. So what ends up having, and what we really have to do, and this is why counties matter most, this article that I'm writing actually lays out this, I'll just say, the strategy of political warfare in demanding the restitution of our Republican form of government. That form still exists. As a matter of fact, I've been going through it, and nobody can argue with me that I'm wrong. Everybody says, you know what, you're absolutely right. And when you start looking at the big picture, restoring or basically reconstituting our form of republicanism is really, holding our public servants accountable to that Constitution. And that's exactly what we got to do. So the second system, the second way is the way that they actually started, the initial path that they used to pervert us is the court system. The court system hasn't changed. By the way, folks, I point out two interesting, points regarding the Warren Court. So the Warren Court actually was the court that did the huge smackdown on our Republican form of government by destroying the county presence in the states. And the fact that we, the people, instituted those governments, the court basically said they're irrelevant now. They had no authority to do that. That was the Warren Court that did that. But it was also the Warren Court that happened to investigate. It was the Warren Commission based on that Warren Court that investigated the assassination of John F. Kennedy. Isn't that ironic that they come back with this magical bullet theory and then they come back with this one vote, one person, one vote theory? This is how we've been basically bamboozled into following what they're telling us because, these people have an equal right of an equal, we're a democracy. No, democracy does not play in America. It is very clear we are to have a Republican form of government. And right in our very noses, they used the intimidation of their supposedly knowledge in perverting us. So the court system is obviously a money mill. The court system is what we need to avoid. And the best way to avoid it at the state level, county level, at every level, is to challenge jurisdiction. The federal courts cannot claim jurisdiction over things that do not arise under that Constitution. When it comes to the forest, when it comes to housing, when it comes to the environment, when it comes to any and everything that they have usurped and assumed and said, we're now regulating your labor, sorry, you have no jurisdiction. You have jurisdiction in D.C. over labor. All of these acts, all of these laws are only applicable to Washington, D.C. and the territories that are not sovereign states. They don't even have the authority to regulate Indian reservations. Indian reservations should actually be given to the Indians as their land to actually own and then be subjugated by the states. And I don't mean subjugated as subjects, but bottom line, they're a part of that state. They're citizens of that state. They need to be treated as citizens. That's what the 14th Amendment did. But nevertheless, the whole point is that the court system is not the process. And when we look at, oh, well, we're going to take on the CO2 pipeline by going into the court, all you do every time you jump into the court is you surrender your sovereignty. Why would you do that? Have we not learned over the 200 years the outcome of going into the court never bodes well for liberty? Never. Oh, well, now we have another option. We've got the Article 5 Convention, because clearly the Constitution is the problem. And clearly, there is zero evidence. This is one of the most weakest arguments out there. And I can't believe how many good patriots have decided to follow the Article 5 Convention. The Constitution is not the problem. We do not need an amendment. We need in compliance to the Constitution. And the fact that these Article 5 weenies, these wonks that say, oh, well, Article 5 is the only thing in the Constitution, and it's the method that the framers gave us to force compliance. No, it isn't. That's an outright lie. The mechanism they gave us to enforce compliance to the Constitution is the First Amendment right of petition. Technically, it's the Third Amendment right of petition by the 12 amendments that we were given, but because it was one of the first 10 that was ratified, it was the first of the 10. And therefore, the right of petition is the mechanism of holding government accountable for them to redress our grievances. What the heck? Who benefits from the convention? Well, those people who are calling for it because they want to be able to control it. The fact of the matter is, and this is the whole irony, folks, and I say this all the time, why would you call a convention to deal with this magnitude of government overreach when the convention actually arises under the Constitution and they actually have authority to regulate it? Don't tell me otherwise. They're already regulating things they don't have the authority to. And so, seriously? You want to actually put a convention on the platter for the federal government? I mean, this is just a ruse, folks. I am sorry. This is why I'm not making a lot of friends, because there's a lot of patriots out there that have bought into these things, like the sovereign citizen movement, this grand facade of all of this how the Constitution is the problem, the federal government, the Constitution, we got to get rid of them. Are you kidding me? So, the next step is the anti-conventionites, the John Birchers, even the Eagle Forum, anybody, the 10th Amendment Center, anybody that is telling you nullification, single state nullification is the path. We already proved last month, we already proved to you that single state nullification is not a proper mechanism. It only creates chaos. It doesn't solve the problem, and it actually creates a worse problem. So nullification's not the path. So what's another path? Well, okay, I've already kind of mentioned the sovereign citizen movement. This is actually a formal path. You can, as a U.S. citizen, abjugate your rights as a citizen and become an inhabitant. The day you do, oh, well, okay, so this is what's really appealing to people. You don't have to pay taxes anymore. Huh. Well, that's kind of nice, but you have no rights anymore based on the law. You're no longer protected by their constitution. You can be deported just like that. Do you really want something like that to happen? Do you really want... And in a time when we need all hands on deck, the most evil and the darkest methodology out there in responding to this really confusing, complex problem of our federal government, it's not that complex. I already just put it into a capsule for it. I encapsulated this as all unconstitutional. And the solution is demanding compliance, enforcing compliance by our public servants, and it starts at the county level. Yeah, I'm so right. And it's not about really being proud about this, folks. This is just absolutely frustrating. Why are people being deniers? Because there's no money in being right. There's no money in going down this path. This will actually solve the problem. As long as the problem exists, it is giving golden eggs to all of these people, to all of these, oh, these brilliant people that can articulate, you know, ways of pointing to the problem and the irony of the problem. They don't care about fixing the problem. The problem is what pays them. And that's the same thing with these organizations that want nullification. The same thing with those who are calling, because it's not just the COS. There's other organizations that are calling for a convention. Oh, well, we're different. No, you're just as bad because you're not going to solve the problem. You're only out to do one little tweak, like, oh, we want a balanced budget, and that causes a bigger problem. Everything that these groups are going to do will actually cause problems. So why would we even consider the party, the court, the convention, or even nullification, or even the sovereign citizen movement? There's one other path. There's one other path that there's a large movement out there of people of Second Amendment rights that are actually believing that they have to use guns. This only goes to show that they only understand the Second Amendment of the Constitution. They do not understand the power of the people. They only understand the power of the gun. And maybe this speaks to their literacy. Maybe this speaks to, you know, how they want to solve the problem. Maybe they're just so frustrated and so upset that they would just want to kill people. I guess. I don't know. I understand that when people get that frustrated, what we have to do is we have to do something. But what we have to do is maybe a little difficult. It's not really difficult. It's very simple. But you know what? It's going to require a little exertion on your part. We have to force compliance to the Constitution. This is why we have legislation that we've actually offered out to states, and they've been running this in Wyoming and South Dakota for the past couple of years, or in Wyoming last year, this past year in South Dakota. Bottom line, folks, it's all about compliance. It's all about helping people focus that we need to demand compliance, that our public servants are legally bound by that oath. We have a right to petition them based on that oath, and we have a right to have them removed based on Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. We have everything we need within that Constitution, within the supreme law of the land. You cannot tell me the divine hand of providence did not understand what we would be facing and gave us everything in this document he inspired. There's nobody that can refute any of this. I don't care how well they're educated in constitutional law. They cannot refute this. This is why nobody wants to talk to me, especially at that level. And so we're hoping to have more conversations. We're actually hoping to get more and more people to actually start echoing and chanting compliance to the Constitution. We've got a whole new year, and this may be our last. Let's make the most of this. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. And we're going to give you all that you need for this year to do this.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.